Hello, everyone, and welcome. Nowadays, you'd be hard-pressed to talk to a leader without the word strategy or strategic in your conversation. And I'm very strategic in our conversation today because I've got two wonderful people, one whom you've heard on our show before and you will continue to hear, Marilyn Tam, who is going to help facilitate some of these conversations with me. And then we're joined by Rich Horwath, who not only is a New York Times bestseller, Wall Street Journal, USA, and so forth and so on, but has really approached this whole notion of strategy and strategic thinking from a different context. So, Rich, great to be with you. Marilyn, welcome.
Thank you.
Marilyn, very nice to be with you as well today.
Rich, let's start kind of by setting some context, because as I mentioned to you earlier, off record, I think one of the things that distinguishes your approach is the way that you handle it. So why don't we just, you know, strategy is one of those terms that's used and misused in business. Get us clear on the perspective you take. What is strategy? How do you define it?
Well, most simply put, strategy is how you effectively allocate your limited resources, your time, your talent, your budget, to outperform the competition. And I think the challenge, to your point, that many people have with strategy is it's abstract. You can't reach out and touch it. It's like leadership. It's like love. And so I think strategy takes on a lot of different meanings and interpretations. But when we really boil it down, strategy is how we're going to achieve our goals and objectives. What's the path? What's the approach that we're going to take to be successful? And I think too often strategy is left at the corporate level, and the individual manager, the individual leader doesn't touch strategy, doesn't dialogue about strategy on a regular basis. It's left for that once a year annual pilgrimage to the offsite meeting. And strategy really needs to move from that once a year event to more of an ongoing dialogue about key business issues.
And Rich, is at the heart of strategy, is it always differentiation?
Well, you know, Mo, that's an interesting question, because some people think that strategy is simply being better than the competition. And the reality is there is no such thing as better. Better is subjective in our minds. And there is no best car. There is no best hotel. It depends on the person and the value that they're looking for. So when we talk about strategy, we're really talking about what's the differentiated or unique value that you can bring to the table through your products and services. People don't want to know if you're better. People want to know how you're different in ways that they value.
And I want to ask one more question, and then Marilyn, I want you to dive in. But early on in the book, and last we spoke, you'd broken down when someone says to think strategically, you've broken it down to the three A's. We're going to get to the three C's in a minute, but you've broken it down to the three A's, which is really the radar of our thinking. Talk about that for us.
Sure. Through about 10 years of research and looking at several hundred companies, what we found is that strategy and strategic thinking, more so, can be broken down into three basic disciplines, which are acumen, allocation, and action. So acumen's the insight. All great strategy, all great projects begin with that so what, that aha, that leads to new value for customers. The second day is allocation. Allocation is, how are you focusing your resources, your time, your talent, your budget to effectively drive your goals and objectives? So great strategies is much about what you choose not to do as it is about what you choose to do. And then the third A is action. Too often we have lots of plans, templates, PowerPoint decks on strategy. We do the dog and pony show. We present the strategy, then it disappears into a binder, that PowerPoint deck, and doesn't get opened for another 10 or 11 months. So action is, how do we stay focused on what's important to the business and not get distracted by the urgent things that pop up on email and voicemail and take us off task?
And then we'll jump, will you skip the B's? We'll get to the C's in a minute. But Marilyn, I know you have a question.
Well, Rich, I'm sure everybody listening is going to say, yes, that sounds like exactly what we want. We want something that we can live. But how do we take that concept that you're talking about into action? Because what happens, as you say, it gets into a binder, it gets into a PowerPoint. Some companies even make it into a one page or something that everybody can have in front of their desk. But how does that translate from that piece of paper or that binder into action so that everybody down in organization, having, you know, run companies, and as you have too, how do we make that switch in the concept of the mindset of the people that you're leading?
Well, Marilyn, that's a great point. And the first thing that we have to do is we have to give ourselves permission and time to think individually and collectively as a team about our business. And that sounds very basic, but the reality is most of the times when teams, leadership teams, management teams are getting together, it's more presentations. It's very didactic, and it's not the dialogue, the back and forth, the thinking about new ideas, the generation of new insights that really leads to significant growth and profitability for organizations. The reason strategic plans have so much baggage and people are disinterested in planning is because the plans look the same year in and year out. And the reason they look the same year in and year out is because people don't have new thinking that goes into the plan. And so to your point, the first step is really carving out time in our schedules, whether it's 15 minutes a week individually or 1 hour a month as a team, to think strategically about the key business issues.
Rich, which is really the conversation of the new book, Elevate. Here, again, you introduce us to the three disciplines that I think really guide that dialogue, right? The three C's. You want to dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, exactly, Mo. And so the three C's are really meant for, you know, for senior leaders, folks, as Marilyn mentioned a moment ago, who are leading business units, leading groups, leading companies, leading functional teams. How do you get beyond kind of that basic element of strategy and really, really raise your game, raise your thinking to another level? And so it really boils down to three things, three disciplines, three advanced disciplines. And the first is coalesce. So coalesce means you as a leader need to bring together people and bring together their insights, their ideas on a regular basis so that you're continually generating new value for customers. Once we've done that, then the second C is compete. So we're going to take the insights, the new ideas, the new ways to bring value to customers, and now we're going to create a system of strategy to effectively compete in our marketplace. Too often, planning is very inwardly focused. We look at a SWOT analysis and say, what do we do well? What don't we do well? But we don't open our eyes to the bigger marketplace and say, how are we perceived relative to the competition? Because that's how customers are perceiving us. And then the third C is to champion. And this really speaks to Marilyn's point. We've got to be able to influence not only people's thinking, but their behavior as well. And as a leader, we've got to be able to understand how do we build strategic thinking habits so that we're not constantly falling into things like fire drills where we're continually reacting instead of being proactive on a regular basis.
Rich, I want to touch on one thing and then I'll turn it over to you, Marilyn. But, you know, systems and patterns for a moment, because, you know, this determines how far we go. When you start working with a business, what gives you assurance that they have sound systems in place?
Well, it's a good point, Mo. It goes back to what we initially said as far as the fire drills. If the senior leaders are saying our people are really reactive, they're bouncing around like bumper cars at a carnival, they're fighting fires all the time, that's a good indication that there really isn't a strong system in place that filters out what people should be working on, and just as importantly, what people should not be working on. The fire drills are really symptomatic of not having a system of strategy and a filter to decide, here's what we're going to do, and just as importantly, here's what we're not going to do. If people want to increase productivity, it's not about your to-do list. It's actually more about what's on your not-to-do list.
Rich, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting that you talk about in the book, and I know it's not relevant for everybody, but platforms. I think I'm one of those believers who feel like we've entered this era of platforms. I really think it's going to be kind of very applicable to 21st century businesses. I mean, do you feel the same way? I know it's not applicable to everybody listening, but the great majority ought to pay attention.
Mo, it's a great insight by you, because the reality is we're so connected today to lots of different groups, to lots of different customers, that if we're only thinking about one aspect, or we're only thinking about our perspective and our product and our service, then we're really missing an opportunity to connect and bring value to a lot more people. And so the platform idea is, how do we create a base, something that other people can connect to, find value in, so that we're not just exchanging value in one direction, but we're exchanging value in a lot of different directions. You know, you look at a company like Netflix, and Netflix for many years has been very successful in creating a platform for people who want to view entertainment. But now Netflix has also been open to not only the sharing of content through that platform, but now they're also in the creation of content for that platform and giving people the opportunity to binge view and watch new shows that haven't been seen anywhere else. So, you know, Netflix is a good example, Mo, to your point, of the importance of being open to platform types of businesses and saying, where can our value really be channeled into different directions?
And you'd be hard pressed, Rich, to find a technology company today on the forefront that doesn't think from that context.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the companies like Microsoft for many years, you know, built their living on obviously on the Word platforms, their operating system, the Windows obviously has been their bread and butter for many, many years. But now you look at their gaming console, the Xbox Live, and what they've done is they've started to create a platform where they're not just kicking out a software package, but now they're providing a conduit for gamers, for video game developers, for a lot of different people to get together in a common place to find value. And to your point, that's what a lot of great technology companies are doing. And I think a lot of companies in other spaces are starting to get there as well.
Yeah. And Marilyn, I know you want to kind of dive into something very specific to our time. But one of the things that I just thought of, Rich, too, was this, you know, this radical transformation that Sony has gone over, selling off almost everything except their platform businesses.
And I want to add to that, because I think what we're talking about here is how an organization, a company is defining their business and who, what they are serving and who their customers are. So, and as you say, Sony is morphing their business from selling entertainment pieces to a different definition of what their platform, as you call it, is really who are they serving and who the customers are. So how would you suggest a company in the 21st century with the speed of technology and change define what their platform should be?
It's a great question, Marilyn. Again, we have to start with really as a company, what's our core competency and what are our capabilities? Because the reality is the ability to create a platform is going to be at least initially conceived through your core competency. And your core competency is really, you know, what do you know? What is your base of expertise? And then your capabilities are the resources and the activities that allow you to bring external value to the marketplace. So to your point, that, you know, the platform initiation really begins with a good examination of what's our core competency and what's our capabilities. And based on that, where might we channel that value that we can produce? And are there other markets, potentially adjacent markets, that we haven't tapped into that potentially could find great value there?
Mm-hmm. And this is where you come in and really offer value, helping them decide and determine that.
Yeah, to that point, it's really, giving people the opportunity to become aware of how do I methodically think through my business? So how do I look at my business model, my core competency, my capabilities, my competitive advantage, and really bring all of those things together, as we said earlier, to coalesce all of those things, to bring them together to create a sound business platform that's going to drive our competitive advantage and our profitability into the future. And I think, Marilyn, to your point, too many people look at a value proposition or a strategy, but they don't connect those things into a cohesive plan that's going to allow them to be successful over the long run.
Rich, is innovation a strategy?
You know, Mo, that's something that comes up quite a bit, and I would say no. I would say innovation is not a strategy, and here's why. Innovation is, in its simplest form, is the ability to create new value for customers. So what I would say is all good strategies should be attempting to create new value. A strategy then is how are your company and your business going to create that new value? That's what the strategy is. But no, innovation is really just simply how do we create new value? And I think too often we're trying to come up with this billion-dollar technology when in many cases innovation simply can be small things that lead up to new value for the customer.
And speaking of that, we've talked a lot on our program about business model innovation being a really critical competency today. I mean, do you see business model innovation as a strategy?
I do see it as a strategy because when you look at a business model, we can break it down into three things. A business model is how you create, how you deliver, and how you capture value. And so if you're not continually innovating your business model, the reality is you're going to fall behind the rest of the marketplace that's looking forward and not backward. And that's the problem many companies face, many leaders face, is they're so concerned with the rearview mirror. What worked for us in the past? That's important to know your history. But the reality is, as a good company, what's the new value that people are seeking in the future? That's where people get ahead of the curve and are able to really bring new direction to a marketplace to create that white space that doesn't exist today, but will allow them to position themselves very favorably in that new competitive landscape.
And Marilyn, I'm sure you can lend some credence to the whole notion of really the value creation being focused on what we did well in the past, as opposed to what Rich just mentioned, what new capabilities can we bring in the future? You see that happen every day in all sizes of businesses.
And I think really what Rich is talking about is so key, is that talking as you did, Mo, is about business model innovation, because when I consult and speak to different businesses, a lot of them are talking about innovation being so important, but they're thinking of products or services that they're innovating instead of looking bigger at what you two are talking about right now, which is looking at the business model that we're working on instead of saying, okay, is this a newer way of delivering what we already do? But stepping back and saying, what is it that the customers want that they may not even realize at this moment? What wants are we addressing instead of, or what needs are we addressing instead of what wants we're addressing? And then going from there to saying, how do we morph or refine our business model in a way of innovating it to create and deliver and capture the value that our customers are dealing with? So how do you work with that, Rich, to make sure that your clients and people that are working with you think that way?
Well, first piece is education. The reality is people get the basic blocks incorrect as far as, is this a strategy? Is it a tactic? Is it a goal? Is it an objective? Is this a value proposition? Is it our positioning? So to your point, Marilyn, the first step is really educating your people on the fundamental concepts around strategy, around business models, so that everybody has clear definitions of what they're talking about. Once that education takes place, then it's simply a matter of giving people the right questions and the right frameworks to harness their thinking, so that you start to build a group that together is using their collective thinking to generate new ideas, as you said, to look forward into the future. What are the problems? What are the challenges? What are the issues that our customers are facing today? Because many times those problems, issues, challenges are going to be the areas where we can bring new value moving into the future. So I believe it's really two things. It's education, and it's the tools or frameworks that allow leaders to harness their people's best thinking so that the plan moving forward is as good as it can be.
Rich, I want to bring up something. When I spoke about your book with a group of entrepreneurs, one name popped up to me repeatedly, just for me personally, Jack Welch. Very few people competed like he did when he was at the helm of GE. You know, I learned a lot from him. I still learn a lot from him. How do you see his competitive strategies mesh with your approach?
Well, one of the things I think Jack Welch did really, really well was he had a laser-like focus on the things that were crucial to a business success. And so as he did that, he was able to very quickly find beneath the surface of the business the one or two things that were going to indicate if that business was going to be successful long term, meaning a top one or two in their market, or where was there a system in place that wasn't going to allow them to be successful. And so he would take the resources for businesses that weren't going to be successful and reallocate those to other businesses. And when you look at the research, the number one driver of revenue growth for large organizations is the continual reallocation of resources from underperforming projects or businesses to ones that have higher level of performance and potential in the future. And so I think that's where, you know, his genius was the ability to focus. Unlike other people had the discipline to focus, because if we think about it, you know, we often spend a couple hours a week or a few thousand dollars doing this or that, that really doesn't bring value. The people who become the most successful, like a Jack Welch, are the ones who use their time and their people's time as effectively as possible. And so in the new book, one of the things that we talk about is how do you as a leader effectively allocate your time and reduce the amount of waste that's going into your day so that you can help your people reach their full potential from a business and a personal perspective.
Marilyn, there's another company that starts with a G that you were starting to talk about with Rich before we started recording. And I think it's really relevant that you dive into that today, because that's something very actual that people can relate to what's happening and also Rich's methodology.
And what we were talking about is about General Motors and this whole expose or challenge that they're having right now with their cars, the recall on the ignition. And this is a problem that's been around for 10 years. So obviously they didn't focus, as you say, on how to reduce waste, because now they really have a lot of waste going on and potentially, you know, cost the company a large multiple of what it would have cost if they fixed it before. So this has to do, I'm sure, in your theory with mindset and how to allocate their resources and thinking. How would you say that works as far as, I think one thing we didn't talk about before is ethics. And this gets to that issue. How do we weave all these issues into what's right for the organization, whether we call it ethics or what's business, a better business decision, but ultimately, how do we make sure that we're serving our customers the best way possible?
Well, I think it comes back to the idea of value for external customers and value for internal customers. And the reality is, if we're thinking strategically and we're innovating and we're coming up with good strategy, inherently we're trying to serve our customers to the best of our abilities. And again, when we see instances where customers either internally or externally are not being served well, they're not being provided value, then we have to ask ourselves, were people really thinking strategically? Were they looking to provide new value, or were they simply looking to, from a financial perspective, you know, meet short-term numbers? Because obviously a lot of public companies are under pressure to meet short-term numbers. So the question becomes then, are we looking at the long-term or the short-term? And the reality is, good strategy, whether it's long-term or short-term, demands that we provide value in a new or unique way to our customers. And once we start getting into process and we get into templates and we start to lose the connection with the customer and what the real value is there, that's when we open ourselves up to going down paths that may not be as productive from a long-term perspective, to your point.
Rich, let me talk about the trap of time for a moment, because we all deal with it. And two of the people that I admire who really understand that is obviously Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, who prefer individual think time where they literally lock themselves up and just think. What do you find common amongst those who you think really excel at this thing?
Well, Mo, I think you hit on a key piece here, because the reality is, good ideas don't necessarily come from us being on that activity treadmill day in and day out of just, you know, nose to the grindstone, work, 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 process, process, process. The reality is, the great leaders, the great contributors throughout history have given themselves time to step back from the day-to-day work and look at how what they're doing fits into a bigger, a higher level, a higher contribution. Going back even to people like Da Vinci, Einstein, Edison, they all took thousands and thousands of pages of notes. And just as importantly, they took time to go back to those notes and ask themselves, what does that really mean to the work that I'm trying to contribute? And people like Jeff Bezos, I know today, and Bill Gates, when he was running Microsoft actively, would carve out the time to think about what is their insights, what do their ideas mean to the business. And the reality is, as I work with managers day in and day out, people simply don't feel like they have the time. Time is the biggest strategy challenge that we see from a research perspective today. 96% of organizations believe they simply don't have time to really do strategy on a regular basis. But what we see is, the great leaders, the great contributors do make the time. Because if you don't make the time as a leader, it's not going to happen.
Two more questions, Rich, so we can keep within our time frame. I'm going to ask one, and Marilyn, I'll turn it to you to ask the last one. It used to be common practice that strategic planning was a three-year horizon, 3 to 5 years typically. I know that well-established companies, you know, who do it now in three-month increments. What's your thinking about the time frame in order to be effective with executing strategy?
So I think it's not an either-or. I think it's an and approach. What I recommend is, people have a plan where they're looking roughly 3 years out. The key, though, is not to just rely on that plan. The key, in my estimation, is to do a strategy tune-up, which is basically a mini deep dive on your business, basically every quarter. So to your point, Mo, every 3 months, you're getting your team together, spending a half day or so looking at the key business issues, asking what's changed, what's new, where's the customer going, what is the competition doing. So again, I think it's not an either or, it's an and. You want to have a longer term plan, and you want to have a periodic strategy tune up, just like we would take our cars in to get tuned up, to make sure that all things are running in tune with one another. People are in tune with one another, our processes, our culture, all of those things are working together. But if we're not looking at that on a quarterly basis at least, then we have the opportunity for the competition to jump up and take us by surprise if we're only looking a year or 2 years out.
Madam Tam, you get the last question for Rich.
Well, Rich, you've had so much wonderful input and suggestions on how a company can really better themselves. So if they are just new to you, or they're new to this whole concept of how to do it better, what would be your one message you give them to take away from working with you?
One message this simple premise. New growth comes from new thinking. If you're not interested in stepping back from the day-to-day, if you feel you don't have the time, your people don't have the time to step back, you will not experience new growth. You have to give yourself new ways to look at the business in order to realize that new growth. A farmer doesn't plant seeds 1 year and then hope the next 5 years that things continue to grow. They plant seeds year in and year out so that they continually get that new growth. And as good leaders, we need to do the same thing. We need to have new thinking on a regular basis to create that new growth for our business.
I think it's pretty obvious for everyone who's had the opportunity to listen to this why I feel that Rich not only brings a completely different perspective, but I just think the conversation of strategy he has is completely different. Rich, just let's leave us with how people can learn more about your work. Where do you want them to go? And if they want to reach out to you, how do you want them to do that?
Well, Mo and Marilyn, I've appreciated the chance to be with you today. I have a lot of free articles, free white papers, free videos, free MP3s at a website called strategyskills.com. So if you'd like to learn more about the process, the tools, the books, the workbooks, the mobile apps, strategyskills.com will give you a good jumping off point.
Thank you, Rich. To be continued.